Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And welcome, everyone. History of Westeros podcast. Aborted version and restarted. It happens. That's live streaming for you. Stuff happens. So every Saturday, we gather here to discuss the next episode of House of the Dragon. It's only episode 3 that we've had. Only 3 episodes in the books. So quite a bit of season left. We talk predictions, related topics, and things that we missed during Monday's episode, because, you know, we get to it pretty quickly after the episode's out, less than 24 hours. We try to be complete, but this stuff is way too deep to get it all, so that's why we have a second episode for that. And joining us today for our excellent preview, returning guest, someone you all know quite well. She's been here several times and will be here again, and we go on their show as well. It's Lady Gwyn from Radio Westeros. How's it going?
Hello, it's going great.
Double deja vu.
Yeah, I know.
That's all right. Well, besides House of the Dragon, what have y'all been working on over there at Radio Westeros?
Well, we're planning what we're going to be doing after the season's over, of course. We've got some things that we haven't quite finalized yet, but one of the major things we're working on is part 5 of our Dance of the Dragon series.
Heck yeah, we're getting ready to put that out. It should be this month, so stay tuned for that. And it's looking like it'll be a total of 7 parts. We've mapped it all out now, and we're just working on writing the different sections of part 5, but as far as our plan goes, it should be 7 parts, which is nice, a nice round number, very holy number.
Very fitting.
That's right. So we got a lot to cover today, some predictions to make, a few things, that, like I said, some things that we missed last time. You can, of course, watch the streams 3 o'clock Eastern on Saturday, and spoiler-free streams on Mondays at 6. You can watch the replays on YouTube or Spotify, and podcast versions anywhere you get podcasts, like Spotify or Amazon Music or, say, iTunes or any podcatcher you use. So Here's a thing. I have COVID, but I'm still streaming. So if I seem a little off or my voice sounds funny,
that's why. That's why I'm off camera today, because I have to keep my distance from Aziz and wear a mask.
That's right. We have had to quarantine in-house. This is the second time. Last time it was her with it and me not. So it's kind of strange, right? That's COVID for you. Just, it's so unpredictable. She got it at a convention in April that we were both at and traveled together. And then this time I got it at the convention and she didn't. And we were together most of the time. So anyway, figure.
So if Aziz is a little loopy today, you know why.
That's right. That's right. I may not be quite my normal self. We'll see, though. So timeline-wise, it looks like a shortish jump. It's a big jump for a TV show to even go 6 months, but given the jumps we've had so far, that's on the smaller end. I guess that's as short as the other short jump. We had about a year jump and a 3 year jump, and this will be our second 6-ish month jump. And what's our thinking on that? This is kind of an estimate, partly because of Helena is born and the street performer, right? That's a big clue, isn't it, Lady Gwyn?
Yeah. Yep. So she's holding a baby that, you know, obviously looks like Helena. It's notoriously difficult to tell how old babies are, infants in particular, on television, because they tend to not use appropriately sized, you know, newborns.
Yeah. Labor laws and all.
But she's got to be at least 6 months old. But then there is this voiceover from this, it says street performer, if you're watching it with subtitles on, and he calls Aegon a babe of three. Huh. And we just had his second birthday. That's what that entire episode 3 was about. So it could be as much as a year, which begs the question if Alicent might be pregnant again in this episode, since Aemon should be coming along pretty shortly if it's been a year.
That's true. Yeah, all her kids do come in fairly short succession as far as childbirth goes in Fire and Blood, and it seems like that's important for them to do in the show as well, to get that all taken care of before the big time jump. So I guess Daemon maybe has a little bit longer to finish off the Stepstones, since we're seeing his return. Clearly he doesn't just head right back the second he kills Crabfeeder, or perhaps the timeline is, I'm not sure there, but it seems like in canon, book canon rather, that is what happens as well. There's a little bit of more time to finish off the Stepstones. It's the multiple islands. There's other Triarchy forces here and there. They may just yada 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 over that, but it would make sense that there's more to do just besides killing Crabfeeder and saying, all right, we're done now. Yeah, it wasn't quite that simple. We did see something we'll talk about maybe off and on here in this episode if we get a chance, but I wanted to throw a mention to the deleted moments that have been making their way around social media. There's a deleted scene of Allison in her wedding dress. And apparently there was a... Look at that thing. That is awesome. And Rhaenyra, apparently they were going to have a confrontation, which makes sense. Rhaenyra helping Allison get ready to marry her father. Yeah, that's awkward, right? So I guess we missed out on what could have been a pretty cool scene. But I bet we're going to get to see it. I think it seems like they filmed the whole scene and they probably didn't want to cut it, but they just had to for continuity reasons and for, you know, the way they're doing time jumps and all. But I bet we get to see it. I bet it gets put on a Blu-ray or something like that. So we will probably get to see it.
Yeah, I would guess, because it's not a scene that was cut because visual effects aren't done or something like that. You know what I mean? Like, it's probably effectively done and able to be released. It was time.
That's a good point. A lot of times deleted scenes weren't completed. They realized it wasn't going to happen before they got all the way through the process and didn't bother with the CGI or the final touches or adding in the background and all that. And so to release that would make it look awkward, or they'd have to go ahead and put that effort in. But in this case, I mean, you had Allison all dressed up and it looks like the scene was pretty complete, if not entirely complete. So that's another reason why we'll probably get to see it eventually. And hopefully some other ones too. There might be some other hidden deleted scenes that sneak through that we'll get to enjoy, hopefully a decent chunk of them. We'll start with Daemon. After what he just pulled in front of everybody, his amazing run, quite literally run and fight and all that, that's impressive. Regardless of what you think of it, if you witness that, you'd be like, wow, that guy, he really did that, didn't he?
You probably feel like that guy, like, save me, my prince. You can see why people might be passionate about Damon and what they saw them do that.
It's a good point. They already liked him even before. They certainly were in awe of him, and the ones who weren't stepped on are even more in awe of him now. Which could mean quite a bit more loyalty. It also could mean his pride is a little bit more settled. I'm sure he's still quite proud. What I mean is maybe he doesn't have a chip on his shoulder anymore. He no longer feels like he hasn't proved anything. He's done something to match his brother, maybe. His brother didn't earn a kingdom. It was given it to him. Damon has. So there's a lot of things that might change about his personality. But that doesn't mean it's a good thing, right? Just because he might be a little less petty, maybe less rebellious, less in the shadow of his brother, that doesn't mean he's just going to like start helping the kids in the orphanages and feeding the hungry. He might be worse. He might be more confident with his moves. He might be more like feels like he's more deserving of higher position. We'll see about that. So he will have less hair, though. Apparently, he cuts his hair. I guess that's maybe one way to show a change in character and a little bit of passage of time. So.
He just kept getting stuck on his new crown, I think. He was tired of his long hair. It just like would get pulled. I mean, I can relate. I'm sure you can relate too, Lady Quinn, that whenever you wear your crown, it gets your hair gets stuck on it. So.
Definitely that. Also, if you get, you know, crab feeder guts stuck in your hair, it might have just been better to chop it off.
Crab feeder guts.
Stuff's hard to get out.
Couple of super chats from some friends here. Callista Cross sends one and says, can't watch live, so just popping in. Excited to see your thoughts on what's to come. Well, appreciate that. You can catch the replay later, of course. Mara Lee sends a super chat, just a show of love and support. Appreciate all the content. Well, we appreciate you, Mara. We'll keep it coming. We're having so much fun together as a group here. Ani Harutunyanyan. I have to learn how to say your name, Ani, but you have supported us for a long time. She's also a supporter of our Witcher podcast. So thank you very much, Ani. Very, very much appreciated. So yeah, Damon, we got some shots here. He comes in with his new crown, his short hair, he's got the hammer, a crab feeder's hammer just right there like a prize of war. And at some point he seems to hand it off to, you know, he's not allowed to be armed approaching the king. It looks like he hands it to Harold Westerling. At one point you can see Harold holding it and presumably he has to hand over Dark Sister as well. Yeah, you can see right in the bottom left there, it looks like Harold is like holding the hammer and the crown.
And the crown.
It's kind of funny, Blackfyre is sheathed there, but I almost think that's a better look for what the blade should look like, all black like that. That's almost like what I imagine it really could look like. But so Kristen Cole on the other side there. Kristen Cole being there tells us a little something about maybe when this is happening or maybe not. I'm not entirely sure. This seems to be, I would guess this is early in the episode because we know Damon's around, you know, like sneaking around and doing stuff and maybe getting in trouble. So this has to be the first thing, I would think, to kick all that off.
I guess I kind of thought Christian was Rhaenyra's personal guard, so I'm a little surprised that he's with Viserys in the throne room and not protecting Rhaenyra.
That is him, right? I'm not mistaken.
Yeah,
right?
That's him.
Okay, cool. Yeah, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. When you zoom in, you can really tell. Yeah, so I'm guessing that shot where Daemon buzzes them with Caraxes, where he just goes over the ship like that and they're like, take cover. I'm guessing that's actually him returning from the Stepstones. Like they're returning from this jaunt to Storm's End, which we'll cover later. I'm guessing they're sailing back to King's Landing and at the same time Damon is returning from the Stepstones. That's just a total guess, but it fits super well. Yeah. So that's kind of where
that answers my I had been wondering. I was like, why is Rhaenyra on a ship with Kristen and Caraxes?
Same outfit she's wearing? I didn't think to look at that. It might be the same outfit she's wearing at Storm's End. That would really help us figure it out.
I feel like she would change to a different traveling gown. But
she might, but if she does have the same outfit, that would tell us. It's not necessarily a clue.
She's in her overcoat, very clearly.
Oh, so she does have that red, though, doesn't she? Under the overcoat, maybe?
It's unclear.
It's hard to tell. There's a little bit of red there, but I can't tell if that's something else or it might just be something else. Anyway, not important. We'll learn soon enough. So let's compare what we know from Fire and Blood to Daemon's return in what we might expect to see in the show. And here's a quote from Fire and Blood, Lady Gwyn.
Says, Wearing a crown and styling himself King of the Narrow Sea, he appeared unannounced in the skies above King's Landing on his dragon, circling thrice above the tourney grounds. But when at last he came to Earth, he knelt before his brother and offered up his crown as a token of his love and fealty. Viserys returned the crown and kissed Daemon on both cheeks, welcoming him home, and the lords and commons sent up a thunderous cheer as the sons of the Spring Prince were reconciled. Amongst those cheering loudest was Princess Rhaenyra, who was thrilled at the return of her favorite uncle and begged him to stay a while.
You know, this is funny because I remember this that line that Viserys said in episode 2, Rhaenyra calling Rhaenys his favorite cousin. Like, she's kind of his only cousin. And this is the same. Like, what other uncle? I mean, maybe she has a Vale uncle, right? Maybe Emma had a brother, and that's her uncle. But but for all we know, this is her only uncle. So that's funny, and that's true in Fire and Blood too. So it's kind of a play on words there. Or maybe that's what the showrunners caught, and they're like, favorite uncle, like, isn't that his only uncle or only uncle? So they decided to do the same joke, but
leaning into that joke.
Definitely her only Targaryen uncle. So that's for sure. Anyway. So what did you think of this? What jumps out at you here, Lady Gwyn? Obviously, that's not at the tournament, but that's a small change, right? I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, so first of all, one of the first things that I noticed about this scene was in previews early on, you know, months ago probably, we had stills or something that showed the scene, and the framing struck me as so amazingly close to the artwork by Chase Stone from the World Book. You get that picture of Daemon handing up his crown.
There it is. Nice job, Ashea.
Yeah, thank you. And it is just, it's stunningly close to that, which minus Caraxes, because the Chase Stone artwork, you can see Caraxes' tail at the very bottom.
Looks so severe.
probably didn't bring Caraxes into the throne.
You'd think that would be frowned on. Yeah,
I think it's probably frowned on. But to me, it just shows like the absolute love that the production team was taking with this show. Really, really sticking close to the source material.
Yeah, we've both been noticing that a lot, haven't we, Helm? Just little nuggets. Yeah. It really, even though they're little, it really gives you that sense of, wow, they do know the material. They really do. They're catching these clues, the kind of things that we love to do week in and week out. They're right there with us. That's amazing.
Yeah, absolutely fantastic. So, and you mentioned about the tourney in Fire and Blood. Daemon came back during a tourney that was held to celebrate Viserys and Alicent's 5-year anniversary, which is actually the event where the Blacks and Greens got their names, the green gown and the black gown. So no sign of those colors in the preview. So I don't think that is going to, you know, be the way they go in this episode. So they're splitting those two events in some way, apparently. But obviously, we should be on the lookout for those bigger fault lines to be forming between Rhaenyra and Alicent.
Yeah.
Because I do assume that the 5-year tourney or the show equivalent, however they're going to handle that split of the Greens and the Blacks, will actually be, if not in this episode, it's got to be in episode 5, because it will set up that a really big divide between the two camps prior to the major time jump that will be coming along.
It occurs to me, I think they might not use the terms Greens and Blacks in the show. I'm kind of guessing they're just not going to bother with that. Just the factions are kind of obvious. They don't need that term. It's just kind of obvious to say Blacks, you know, as a faction, just walking around saying that. They were like, maybe we shouldn't have that. Maybe if it was like Browns and Greens or something other color, but they just don't want, I don't know. I'm just guessing, but the phrase hasn't appeared. It didn't really look from the trailers like there was going to be obvious black and green dressing, maybe. Maybe I'm wrong, but I'm guessing they're just not going to use those phrases. Stupid Minotaur comment says he married his cousin, so shouldn't she be his second favorite? So referring to marrying Emma, right? Well, when he said that, Emma was passed already. So at the time,
but left, yeah.
So before she was his second favorite, but then Rhaenys was promoted to favorite cousin after
she moved up.
Yeah, Emma's passing. Yeah, it's awkward.
Oh dear.
So I guess we'll look for Daemon just to start maybe pecking around the edges, maybe looking at Rhaenyra, and he's going to hear what's happened. Like, he's been out of the loop. I think that's pretty important. he doesn't know that she's fallen out with Alicent. She doesn't know. He doesn't know a lot of these things. I mean, we know he only got that one letter, and I don't know that many other messengers were excited to deliver other messages to him after that. So maybe. So I think he's probably out of the loop. It's possible that Rhaenys has been keeping an eye on what's going on, passing that info to Corlys, and Corlys is passing that to Daemon. But I got to feel he's missing a lot of the nuance, if not a lot of the big events that's happened the last three and a half years while he's been away at war. So he's got to catch up, and that's going to provide him opportunities to make some moves. So let's talk a little more about that. Here's what Fire and Blood has to say about how he spends time with Rhaenyra. It's a little more than just hanging out with your favorite niece, isn't it? It seems seems to have a purpose in mind, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Here's a shot of them chatting alone to frame the quote.
Daemon spent long hours in her company, enthralling her with tales of his journeys and battles. He gave her pearls and silks and books and a jade tiara said once to have belonged to the Empress of Leng. Read poems to her, dined with her, hawked with her, sailed with her, entertained her by making mock of the greens at court, the lickspittles fawning over Queen Alicent and her children. He praised her beauty, declaring her to be the fairest maid in all the Seven Kingdoms. Uncle and niece began to fly together almost daily, racing Syrax against Caraxes to Dragonstone and back.
So I think what this partly sets up is that Rhaenyra is just, no one is good enough for her. No one is her peer. Maybe it isn't good enough isn't the right word, but no one is really her peer. She doesn't have things in common with all these other lords she's been set up, whether it's Storm's End, whether it's Jason Lannister and his ridiculous bragging. It's none of these are really clicking for her. But her uncle, as creepy as the incest angle is, does have a lot in common with her. He's got a dragon. He's got a similar family history, and he knows her. He knows what she likes and how to talk to her, and you know that they've got groundwork already. I like that jade tiara thing that belonged to the Empress of Leng. I feel like this Valyrian steel necklace was kind of the stand-in for that, and she's still wearing it. And I noticed in one other reviewer, I forget who it was, pointed out that the braid on the back of her hair had the same pattern as that Valyrian steel necklace, like the in and out loop, which is pretty cool. A nice detail. Mm-hmm. So you noticed something that's a little different, that Otto would have been stripped of his handship by now in Fire and Blood, and of course would return. We can sort of see some of the same things being set up. I wonder if Otto will be dismissed or not. I think he probably will be, but I'm not sure. They are setting Lionel Strong up to be the actual good advisor, and that's who takes over his hand. So that would fit really well. Is that kind of how you see it going as well? And tell us what else you see from this stuff.
Yeah,
as well.
No, yeah, definitely. I think in Fire and Blood, this had Otto was gone for 2 years before this event, before Daemon came back. But, you know, it's definitely mentioned that Otto was sent away for hectoring the king.
Hectoring.
Which is a great word.
Yes.
Let's call him Hector from now on.
Hector Hightower.
Hector Hightower gets sent away because he's just being a major pain in the butt and he won't stop, you know, harassing Viserys about this succession. So we definitely saw that set up, I think, in the last episode where Lionel Strong was the just kind of steady voice of reason. He's giving good counsel. Otto is just kind of nagging and Viserys is really aggravated by it.
And Hobart's pushing Otto farther. You can see where some of the other pushing is coming from. Yeah.
There's pressure coming at him from, and he's just sending that downstream. So
yeah.
But I think, you know, in the preview, it does seem more like Otto is the one bringing the gossip about Rhaenyra and Daemon to the king. So, you know, I wonder if that could be what leads to him getting fired or if it's just, you know, going to be still the same. You know, he just won't let up about the succession.
Interesting.
And I do think that if he's going to get fired, that this is another thing that obviously has to happen before the big time jump, because you got to have time for the strong Harrenhal arc to play out.
Yeah.
And then for Otto Hightower to come back to be there for the last couple of episodes anyways. So, you know, there's no reason it couldn't happen late in this episode. But again, if not this episode, definitely, I think by the next one, they definitely have to provide some context for a major break between Rhaenyra and Alicent and you know, Otto's firing could be part of that.
Yeah.
Duke the Queen gets left without her father, right?
Good call.
He's been a really major character, though. He's taking on a lot of the sort of pressuring of Viserys about the succession that is Alicent in Fire and Blood. They're doing that in order to keep Alicent more sympathetic, which is understandable, as I actually enjoy what they're doing with her character.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think I could see their motivation for keeping Otto around as for as long as possible because
yeah.
of the way the two are playing.
Do you think Alicent will start switching to start pushing for her kids sooner or later? I mean, we know it's going to happen. She's going to have to switch. Maybe we have that one shot in this episode where Rhaenyra and Alicent are staring each other down a bit. And this could be a lot of things, but maybe this is finally where Alicent gives up on her. Is like, all right, I've actually been trying to help you behind the scenes. I've been still trying to be your friend. You know, I didn't ask for any of this. I've still tried to be a good friend. I've kept the torch lit for you, but it's been, at this point, it will have been 4 years since they're falling out, roughly, and Alicent maybe she's had enough. Maybe she's like, all right, well,
yeah,
we're not friends.
I'm guessing that Alicent's gonna put some stock into the rumor she's about to hear.
Oh, good call. Okay.
Which we're gonna talk a little bit more about, but that would be my guess, is that Alicent is a good, faithful girl who is not going to be happy to hear about Rhaenyra doing some naughty things.
Yeah, because if also because she gets her information about Daemon from her father, and Otto is the biggest anti-Daemon character around at this point. So if she believes her father that Daemon would be another Maegor, she would be opposed to Rhaenyra marrying him because that would put her children in danger. Whereas before, she's like, oh, if she marries a Jason Lannister or a Boros Baratheon or someone like that, my kids probably won't be murdered. You know, she can not have to worry about that. But if Rhaenyra marries Daemon, and yeah, then that puts her children at risk. So that could be the reason she changes her mind. She's like, okay, well, now I wanted to be your friend, but now I think my kids could die. So that's a huge change, right? Like, nothing would make you change your mind quicker than a threat to your children, I would think. So that could be a big problem. Any take on that, Lady Gwyn? Does that make sense to you?
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, there's, like I said, there's something happening in this episode or the next one that's got to cause a major rift. So it may be a combination of many things.
Yeah.
Rhaenyra's continued disagreeability. Whatever. Something, yeah, all those things that we've talked about.
I think Daemon is like the wedge here, like the thing that things have been deteriorating, and Daemon, for his own reasons, could put the acceleration to that. He could say, hey, look, these two are, their relationship is fraying. Why don't I push that a little farther? And you see that in the quote that you read, how he mocked the Greens on her behalf, you know, to get in. It's like, she wants to hear that. He's like, yeah, I'm going to make fun of the people that you hate, and we have that in common, you know? Yeah. So I see that could just make things worse. It's pretty straightforward in that sense. A comment from Cameron, who says the 9th and 10th episodes are called The Green Council and The Black Queen. Yeah, that's a good point. I had kind of forgotten about that. It might, yeah, that might indicate that they really are going to use those phrases directly. But that still doesn't...
It could just be a title as well.
It's just, it is just a title. That's funny, because speaking of our Dance of the Dragons coverage, we loved those chess metaphors as well. Black Queen. That was, we were all about that.
Yep.
Works well. All right, let's talk a little bit about Secrets of the Red Keep. I think that this is an interesting under-the-radar aspect of things. Back in episode 1, when Daemon was spying on the Small Council, that's basically using the secret passages in the Red Keep, like a Varys or someone like that, just learning about where the passages are and not currently in a regime where no one else seems to know about them. There's no Master of Whispers, so there's no one doing that. Like, that's kind of interesting. Obviously, Varys is our best example, but Arya as well has been down there, and clearly other Master of Whispers, Maegor the Cruel, had them built. It wasn't even that long ago. And that's one of the interesting little comparisons between Maegor and Daemon, is this control of the Red Keep secret passageways. So I think that, when we have this picture here, this image of Daemon, like, with his cowl, maybe sneaking around. He's outside, so that maybe means he wasn't using passages. But something's up. Like, he's obviously trying to be undetected. Like, this is a guy who usually walks around boldly, like, hey, I'm Prince Daemon. Notice me. So at night with a cowl, that looks like Sneaky Man. And that makes me think of the passages in the Red Keep and whatever he might be up to here. So what do you think about this, Lady Gwyn? What do you think about the secret passages and Daemon sneaking around? And what do you think this means?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I think it's a good point that that's probably where he was in that first episode. Sneaking around, maybe. I think he, you know, there's definitely going to be a bit of sneaking around with Rhaenyra.
Yeah, that's probably the main thing.
That is the main thing. You mentioned Master Whisperers. I wanted to ask you a question bring up a subject, because Mysaria, who eventually will be something resembling the Mistress of Whispers, really got left hanging after episode 2. We don't really know where she went, what she's doing. She was ordered to do one thing, but we don't know that she actually did that. So do you think she's going to be back? Are we going to see her again this season? In Fire and Blood, she did go away after Dragonstone and did not return until a lot later, which basically would keep her off screen until season 2 at least. But based on how they established her character so far, especially in interviews with Sonoya Mizuno, I really don't think the show's going to leave her off screen for that long after just a few short scenes. I expect to see her again. What do you guys think?
I would say I definitely expect to see her again. I also agree that she did just kind of get left hanging. Like, Daemon leaves and it's like, well, she didn't go on campaign with him. Did she go back to King's Landing? Does she own one of those establishments? That's kind of my impression.
She did own that one, so I think she just
owned
go back
one,
to her.
She goes back to her job.
Yeah.
Maybe.
My guess is that maybe in this episode, if Daemon and Rhaenyra actually do go to a brothel, if they actually go somewhere, maybe they go to Mizaria's. We see her there. Maybe she doesn't even speak or isn't really featured, but we see her and know that this is her place, her establishment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and given what you said, Lady Gwyn, it's a good point, because why did they bother to change those details about her if they weren't going to do something with that, right? Like, the way she's written in the book, it would have made more sense to leave her off, because she just goes to Pentos, where she's gone for a while. And they're like, okay, well, that makes sense. She's off screen in Pentos. But you're right. She does. There's no mention of that here. She does own a brothel where she didn't in Fire and Blood, apparently. So, yeah, she probably just is hanging out at King's Landing. But I'm curious. I'll guess we will see her again this season 2 to maybe set something up. Because also, it would be a little weird for her just to appear and be Master Whisper. So, yeah, maybe a little more sneaking around, maybe something to show us.
Yeah, I'm curious if we'll see her around while Daemon is married to Laena, or while he is married to Rhaenyra. There's multiple relationships that Daemon has that we just don't know what they truly thought of his relationship with Mizaria.
Yeah, and I also just wonder how he leaves things with his Velaryon allies. I mean, he comes on the scene and got his hammer and his, you know, acclaim, gives up his crown. But yeah, what are the Velaryons doing? You know, do they just go back to Driftmark and, okay, we got that settled with the Stepstones? It probably isn't that simple. I mean, Corlys is ambitious. He's got his shipping lanes open again. Maybe he wants to get back on the small council, but that's his spot's been taken by Sir Tyland. He's not really in the trailer, so maybe this is a Velaryon-free episode, but I think Daemon would at least mention him, or maybe we get a scene with him. Maybe we get the long-awaited and expected Laena mounting Vhagar. That would be a chance to see Driftmark. That could be this episode. It seems like it will either be this one or next one, right? It doesn't seem like it will be after the time jump. So any guesses whether it'll be this episode or next episode? Any strong feelings one way or the other?
Do you think Teen Laena will be the one to? It will be Teen Laena. We can confirm that. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so that's where I think it's, you know, it's got to be 4 or 5, because Laena has been cast 3 times, child, teen, and adult. And obviously after episode 5, they're going to move to adult Laena, I would assume. So, you know, Vhagar's been teased enough, and Laena, it's just, you know, they're setting it up, obviously. I wouldn't be surprised if we have a very quick sort of scene showing this, her claiming Vhagar in this episode. Maybe just on the way out.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
Setting up something for the next episode.
It could be probably a 3-minute scene. And even 3 minutes doesn't sound very long, but it'd be a long 3 minutes if we had Vhagar on screen. And it'd be so cool. We know it's coming. There's that trailer of Vhagar leaping off that castle embankment or old ruin. I don't know what that is, but it looks sweet, and I hope we get it tomorrow. But if not, we'll most certainly get it in 8 days, so can't be too far off.
Vhagar is coming.
That's right. And we're excited. Philosophy nerd lady says, I wonder if Mazari is mad enough at Daemon to be the one to spy on him for Otto. That's interesting. Yeah, I mean, there's no hint of her betraying him in Fire and Blood that I can recall, but this is a changed character. I mean, not like massively changed, but significantly changed.
I will say there's no hint of it in Fire and Blood. In House of the Dragon, at Mazaria's party, Otto ends up hearing the air for a day comment.
How did he hear that?
Which points to the idea that even if it wasn't Mazaria, that there's people that are gossiping and sharing info about Daemon that go to this establishment.
Good point. Mm. There is some information going back and forth, especially if we expect that it's going to be Otto bringing up this rumor, presumably about Daemon and Rhaenyra. I mean, it might not be Daemon and Rhaenyra. It could be Rhaenyra and Kristen Cole or something like that. But it's probably Daemon and Rhaenyra.
Yeah, we see both Daemon and Rhaenyra in hooded cowls in the dark, and then we see their hands together.
Yeah.
I think it seems pretty clear to me. Of course, again, Kristen is her Kingsguard, so you would think that, you know, he might notice that she's gone or there in some way, because that does not make him look good to have the princess disappear under his watch.
Again, that's why the passages in the Red Keep could be relevant, because he could be standing outside her door and she could go get away without him knowing and then get back in her room also without him knowing.
And then if someone says, hey, we heard this about Rhaenyra, he's going to be like, I was guarding her room. She didn't leave once. And so he might feel particularly betrayed as having lied for her.
In Fire and Blood, I think it's Sir Eric or Sir Arik, I can never remember which is which, who discovers something, and that it's one of those mini sources moments. Let's discuss that real quickly. But first, a couple of random questions here to think about. These aren't questions that we need answers on, just things that come up in Fire and Blood that we wonder whether they'll make the show or at all, or just a different capacity. For example, will Breakbones be a Gold Cloak captain? That's he's clearly been introduced. The way he smiled at Rhaenyra means they're going that route, which makes, of course, they should. That's the father of her children, or some of them anyway. So that'd be a weird thing to cut, but you know, we wanted to see how that gets set up. So maybe some of that happens this episode. Maybe after Daemon gets kicked out for his issues, that's when Breakbones and or Kristen Cole business starts happening, which maybe that'll be next episode. So no need to answer, just throwing that out there for all y'all to think about. And another one, question I have is Recalio Rendun. He's who comes in and takes the Stepstones when Daemon is distracted back in Westeros. I'm guessing they won't bother with that right away, but they might introduce him next season. It's one of those things like where casting is an issue. They don't want to cast a character just to have him on screen for 2 seconds. It's like the Beric Dondarrion thing where the actor that agreed, the character, the Beric Dondarrion's like, yes, I'll go hunt Gregor Clegane, but that wasn't the Beric Dondarrion actor that appeared for all the other seasons. Richard, what was his name? That guy was great. But yeah, he wasn't the one in the throne room scene when Ned tasked him to go track down Gregor. So it's probably a similar scenario where if they're going to introduce Recalio Rendun, it'll be by name only. The actual actor won't appear till next year, but I'm curious about that. Surely there won't be another battle on the Stepstones this year. I really I really don't see that happening. But yeah, let's move on to this idea of Daemon getting caught while we can. So yeah, thinking back to the scenes we saw in the season previews, there's that moment where Daemon is tossed to the ground and Viserys is clearly mad. He holds the cat's paw dagger that was promised. I've got a lot of names for that dagger. To his neck, that's almost certainly a related moment. So this is probably, him getting caught with Rhaenyra or caught with rumors about Rhaenyra. Probably won't just be rumors, but... So yeah, this is where the sources diverge. Eustace says they slept together after he seduced her. She claimed she was in love with him after that. Mushroom says Daemon was teaching Rhaenyra how to seduce Kristen Cole, which is... That's a really interesting one, because to me, that always thought that was a way for Daemon to get back at Kristen Cole, or to get him out of the way, or I don't know, but it seemed like a way to put the blame on him, because Rhaenyra can't get in as much trouble as Kristen Cole, obviously. Rhaenyra would just be scolded and sent to her room. Kristen Cole would be like executed, you know, or sent to the wall. So it's a huge difference. So Daemon might know what he's doing. If that's the route they decide to go, he wants to pin something on someone else. So here's a quote you found that is very relevant here, given the way they appear to be sneaking around. So why don't you read this for us?
Yeah, it's from Mushroom's account. It says, at night, he would smuggle her from her rooms, dressed as a page boy, and take her secretly to brothels on the Street of Silk, where the princess would observe men and women in the act of love and learn more of these womanly arts from the harlots of King's Landing.
That does sound like teaching her how to seduce someone, right? And maybe it's teaching her how to seduce him, but that's a little weird. The whole thing's a little weird, but in different ways. Mm-hmm. How do you interpret this? How do you lean? Like, before the show, did you have a account that you favored here? And do you think that's the one that's coming into focus? Or how do you see this playing out based on your expectations versus what we've seen?
I think it's more, you know, it's kind of going to be a combination. I think it's worth emphasizing, again, that Mushroom, however crazy his story sounds, insists that Daemon and Rhaenyra did nothing together, that she was, you know, she was saving herself for Kristen Cole. When someone reports that Rhaenyra and Daemon are lovers to Sir Otto, which, like you said, it was Sir Eric Cargill who was telling the king directly. The truth is actually more, you know, on the Mushroom spectrum. I think that's maybe what we're going to get. I think we should be eyeing Rhaenyra's relationship with Kristen Cole.
Yes.
In other words, Daemon kind of, you know, whatever he's doing, you know, being party uncle with Rhaenyra, or who knows what's happening there, but I definitely could see him taking the blame for something he didn't do, or being blamed for something he didn't do, simply because he did other bad things as well, which seems to me to be very nuanced and in keeping with the way they've been portraying him so far.
It's pretty similar to the toasting thing with the Balon toasting.
Yeah, exactly.
Good call.
So, you know, yeah. So I think, you know, if they go the route of him taking the blame, it could play out something like the scene that is reported by Mushroom, where he said to his brother, "Give the girl to me to wife. Who else would take her now?" At which point, Viserys just said, maybe that's when the dagger scene happens, and then he gets sent into exile. He's told never to return to the Seven Kingdoms on pain of death.
Here's a twist with that, which is that he definitely attends Rhaenyra and Laenor's wedding, which has to be in the next two episodes. We see him at the high table. Like, he's even like, mm-hmm, beating his hand on the table in time with the music. Like, he's really having a good time. So that has to... So maybe the exiling isn't quite as intense, or maybe the punishment isn't quite... Mm-hmm. But it's still... It's hard to figure, because like you said, he gets really mad. We see him hold the dagger to his throat. He gets really, really mad. So, and if they're following... And they have followed book canon pretty well on these major events, so... Yeah, I really wonder how they're going to... In one episode, they have to have this come to a head, and Daemon has to be brought back into the fold somehow to be back at the high table and attending the wedding. So if he... I'm not sure it'll be full exile, given how quickly he returns.
He was invited to the wedding on the Velaryon side. The Targaryens didn't invite him. Corlys did. He was a guest of Laenor.
Yeah.
That they had me honestly like, maybe it was just that simple, that Laenor's like, no, I want my bro there at the wedding.
Yeah, maybe.
I think it's true if the wedding's on Driftmark. You know, he's obviously been welcome on Driftmark, so...
Maybe it goes like this. Maybe he gets kicked out, but then goes and marries Lena. And and Rhea Royce may die. I mean, because Rhea Royce should die any minute now. His bronze bitch will pass. Yeah. That's got to happen.
She's riding her. What did she do? She fell.
Yeah,
off
she horse. Fell off her. Maybe we'll have like a 2-minute scene where we're just like, oh, we're in the Vale with a lady riding a horse. Oh, we know what's going to happen here. She's going to fall, and that's that. Yeah, it's a quick. I don't know if they'll.
Yeah, I wonder if they'll
just tell us off screen.
Yeah, I wonder if they'll want to show it off screen or on screen to make people theorize or not.
Oh, to make people like, think, they, yeah, he did it, or yeah. Like it was a murder. Yeah, if you see it happen, well, you could see it happen in a way that makes it look like murder. But if you, there are also ways to show it where it would clearly just be an accident.
Yeah, exactly. So if they don't want people to, if they're like, no, we don't want you theorizing that Damon killed his wife, then maybe they show it happen so that, you know, but I feel like they're not, I don't think there's any reason they would not want people to theorize about that being a possibility.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to be even hinted at in Fire and Blood that he did that. Like, he just stays away from the Vale and he doesn't really have friends there. It didn't seem like something he would do, like he could arrange, but it's possible. So I would guess no on that, but I wouldn't be surprised if they were like, yeah, he did that or made it look like that. So maybe that's another angle here, is that he goes and marries Lena, and that is what Viserys says, okay, you're married to Lena. You're not going to... This whole Rhaenyra business is definitely in the past. Viserys is quick to forgive, I suppose. And maybe bringing, like, kind of like what Shea said, it wasn't a condition of the marriage that they invite him. But if he's on their team and... Viserys wants to mend the fences and bring the Velaryons back in with this big marriage and this big celebration. It would be fitting, especially going into the break, going into the long time jump, having everything look fairly copacetic with maybe some hints towards what could go wrong.
I guess.
And then after the time jump, things really come to a head.
I mean, if I would guess that I would think that Damon and Lena are not married at the wedding, and that Damon marries Lena after the wedding.
Okay.
That's just my theory about that. Partially because when we see the Velaryons all arrive for the wedding, Damon isn't like...
He's already there. Yeah.
He's just sitting at the table. Lena is arriving with Laenor and Rhaenys.
That's a good point.
He's not part of the Velaryon family arrival.
Well, do you have a thought then on how Damon is back in Viserys' good graces so quickly then?
I really think that it might just be that it isn't really as much about Viserys' good graces, that it is that this is Rhaenyra and Laenor's wedding, and so it isn't Viserys' wedding in King's Landing. So like that's my thought, is that Viserys doesn't need to technically approve.
Well, he would need to approve of his presence if he's exiled from the realm. He wouldn't be allowed there at all, but I guess maybe he just isn't exiled. Maybe that's it. They just,
he might be exiled from King's Landing or something like that. He might say, get out of my city or something, but not from Westeros.
That would make sense. Exiled from court could make more sense than exiled from the entire continent. That might be a way to make that work. Anyway, I think we spent enough time on that. We'll just wait and see how it actually plays out. It definitely seems to be a small conundrum, but I'm sure they have got a plan.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it, all while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
So let's see, moving on here. So either way, though, in Fire and Blood, it's similar. Like, this whole episode is pretty quick. Damon returns and isn't there very long before he gets sent away. We'll be more vague about it this time. He does technically return to the Stepstones in Fire and Blood. I'm guessing that's not what happens this time. Maybe he, returns to Driftmark or something, where he has his allies. That would make sense. And if Or maybe he goes back to Rhea Royce. Maybe that's what happens. Maybe Daemon orders him to return to his wife and he actually goes this time.
Viserys.
And then she dies. Maybe. And then...
Viserys orders him.
What did I say?
Daemon
orders him. Oh, yeah. Him. Daemon orders himself to go. Yeah. He's like, I command me to go to the Vale and be with my wife whom I hate. Yes.
I really hope we see Rhea Royce. There's been theories. Well, there's been speculation that there was someone cast that people think is Rhea Royce. It looks like Rhea Royce to me. The costuming looks like her, but it's just not confirmed. Mm. And so I would love to actually see that. Plus, I mean, as we've seen, scenes are deleted. So even if someone was cast and was in it, we shouldn't count that as 100% that we'll see that person.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. But I would like to.
So another angle to the exile as to what triggers it. There's another line from Fire and Blood here, just a one-liner. Others assert that it was at Queen Alicent's urging that Viserys sent Daemon away, which could be a spark for more issues between Alicent and Rhaenyra if she finds that out. Like, you sent away my favorite uncle. I was having fun with him. How, you know, you ruined my fun again, you former best friend. So... connecting it to Alicent is also connecting it to Otto. If Otto wants something to happen and he's not getting his way, he might be like, hey, daughter, convince the king that this needs to happen. We've seen that a few times already, like, as in starting with him, her getting close to him and marrying him and all. So that obviously that was Otto's.
I figured out why Daemon will get sent away for real.
Why's that?
It's because he's going to sleep with Alicent, and obviously that's how Aemond is born. The timing's perfect. He's back just in time. Helena's born.
What a
Alicent's
twist.
About to get pregnant.
That would make Viserys mad, too. They'd be like, you slept with my wife. Yeah. Nope. Don't think so.
Really?
So, yeah, this street performer thing, this is something really interesting. That's a big part of the trailer. It's like half of the trailer is this street performer talking, and that's something that's super interesting. It's a really... great storytelling device, isn't it, Lady Gwen? You wrote a few things here. Take it away.
Yeah. So we get voiceover, this guy saying, who will it be, the brother, the daughter, or the little of three? Which, number one, is exactly the sort of thing that's going to aggravate Viserys, because he's already shown himself to be very short-fused about all his politicking. In episode three, it literally drove him to drink.
Yeah.
Not to mention shouting at his hand and his daughter in public, or sort of in public. In front of a lot of people anyways. So, you know, this is not going to contribute anything to Daemon's cause or anyone's cause, really. But as a device, street performers, I found this very interesting because George uses this a lot to show discontent or conflict among the small folk. We got Tansel Too Tall and Duncan Egg with her puppet show. The puppeteers that Cersei has arrested in A Feast for Crows, and not to mention the constant focus on mummers and their dragons in the main series.
Marillion.
it's used a lot. And the man is juggling fire or doing some sort of fire magic. And I thought that could be a nice nod to a magician that Dany sees in Karth in A Storm of Swords.
Yeah.
His fire magic is credited for to the rebirth of her dragon.
Yeah.
And in the same book, we have the pyromancers telling Tyrion that, you know,
are there
fire
dragons?
Magic kind of went when the dragons died, it went from the world. So I wondered if this is a subtle way of showing that when dragons were very much alive, this sort of thing was sort of commonplace. You've got a guy out in the street doing fire magic, and it's just
interesting.
The norm.
That's a really good
more
call,
of that
yeah.
lore. Yeah. Bringing in the good lore.
And you're totally right about how he's had a short fuse about this. It's more and more clear that he doesn't really have much patience for ruling at all. I mean, he does it like almost everything he does as king is begrudging, unless it's feasts and balls and tourneys. And even some of those, he's not super thrilled with the hunt. He didn't really like the hunt that much. He wasn't having a good time.
Much politicking.
Yeah, partly because of the politicking, but yeah.
Yeah.
Also, I'm
and hunting.
Yeah, and the yeah, exactly. It's just him. So that is, and he does nothing to stop these things from happening. He doesn't do anything to enforce her claim. he sort of gives her some advice. He did give her good advice at the end of the last episode. You give him a little bit of credit for that. Well, a lot of credit for that. Just you also take a lot of credit back for a lot of his other actions, I guess, depending on whether you want to do the Stannis school of thought where the good and bad categories are separate, or if you want to just put it all into a ball and combine it into a view of his character. Either way, yeah, it's I wonder if he'll get upset. If this is the kind of thing where, well, I'm not going to get up in my lord's faces because I don't have the patience for that. But street performers, you know, I can make an example out of him, you know, and that might be a way, and that would be kind of dark for Viserys to do that. But, you know, he's a very gray character, so we might see something like that. Or maybe Otto will push for that. Not the execution of street performers, but of, he knows Viserys would be upset by this. And maybe this is his way to, like, push the issue a little indirectly. Because we know...
I see him bringing this. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say real quick, Otto, because Otto understands that you can't force Viserys to do things. He's the, like, you got to make him think it's his idea.
Yeah.
And so he's going to try a lot of indirect approaches. But, yeah, so what were you going to say?
Yeah. Yeah, I was just going to... Exactly. Oh. Like, I could see him bringing this and manipulating Viserys by telling him this story and maybe drop in a comment that, you know, this sort of thing has been happening ever since your brother came back. Maybe if we got rid of your brother,
that makes sense.
Stop having these conversations, which irritate you.
Yeah.
You know,
you're right. And no one wants him gone more than Otto. Maybe one or two others,
exactly.
But Otto's the most powerful by far. People who want him gone. Mm-hmm. So, yes, very interesting. Yeah, I'm very curious about that. Let's talk about Rhaenyra at Storm's End. And there's a notable shot of her, again, looking really uninterested. Like, do I have to? Look at that face. That is... She's really good at making that face. Look at Ashea zooming in on those eyes, like... Millie Alcock is so good. It's hard to, I have not, it isn't settled in my brain that we only get two more episodes of her, which is kind of a bummer.
I know
she's
that
so good. Yeah.
I know it's unlikely, but I have some small hope that they'll be like, oh, these young actresses were so popular. Let's do a little flashback in season two as a treat.
That would be
so
cool.
Like, I wouldn't expect much of it, but I it would be so nice to just get a little bit more in the future.
Last episode, we talked about how this is not an uncommon look for her these days, and how that good advice Viserys gave her is, well, it's good advice. She needs to stop treating potential allies with contempt. Even if she doesn't want to marry Lord Baratheon, she should still be nice to him. Not Lord Baratheon. In this case, she's not going to marry him.
Baratheon.
It's her son, Boros.
Yeah.
This is Boromund. So that's Boros right there.
Yeah, and facing her. I'm curious if she'll only see Baratheon suitors at Storm's End, or if multiple suitors will come to her at Storm's End, including a Baratheon.
Now, my question is he bona fide?
Bonafide.
He's a suitor. Sorry, what is that? Oh Brother, Where Art Thou reference there? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I love anything that combines Greek myth with other stuff. And hey, you know, like that. Last week we compared Damon to Achilles. Here we have Odysseus thrown in the mix.
Here we go.
So she, if her expression is any indication, she hasn't learned from that lesson yet. She's going to upset the Baratheons, which I'm guessing is set up for the awful thing that happens at Storm's End in the last episode this year, which Boros will be like, she was rude to me. Screw her. I'm siding with Aemond here. And that leads to Vhagar and Arrax, which is probably one of the last scenes we get this season. So I put it in the notes. I have Vhagar versus Arrax, but it's really versus Arrax because it's not really a contest, is it?
It's not a contest.
It's a slaughter.
Arrax.
Yeah, it'll be a slaughter. Yes, a single dragon, single rider massacre. And so that's huge consequence. I think this is set up, which is cool because that's not super set up in Fire and Blood. It just, Baratheon's just prideful and upset with the situation, and it makes sense. It fits fine, but this is, I think this is might be even better with a little setup. So
yeah. So let's see. So do we think we'll actually see Rhaenyra be rude, or do you think she'll just be like cold and not interested? Like Rhaenyra's been a little sulky and teenage. Like I could see her.
Yeah.
Insulting this kid. I could see it.
I think so. Yeah. I think it's gonna be. I think contempt. I mean, you can see kind of see it on her face already. Oh. She's like, "Who is this stupid kid?" Like she's so not interested. They captured the perfect expression
on her
face.
So you think that this happens to start off the episode, and then she sails home and is like, "Oh, Damon's back. That's my guy. I really
he's
want.
Who I want." Yeah, because that would set up better than the other way around. You know,
well, I feel like the other way around would work too, because she could have experienced like, "Oh, this is the wide world. Now I'm back to doing this stupid stuff as well."
Yeah, like. Viserys pushes it even harder, like sends Daemon away and is like, "All right, we really got to get you married now because of this." So sends him off.
I feel like it could work either way, personally. And if Daemon gets sent to, like, it could be the dragon arriving, could be Daemon arriving back to King's Landing, but it could also be Daemon leaving because they sent him away.
It almost feels like she's touring or touring all the different characters that will be her enemies. Like the Lannisters, the Baratheons, like the big houses. The Hightowers are already there, obviously. But it's kind of like it's one by one the setup for who her enemies will be later. as well as who her allies will be.
Yeah, Lady Gwyn grabbed a quote here about some other potential suitors that we could see.
Yeah, Lady Gwyn, tell us what you think about some of this stuff and some of the stuff you pulled as well. This is good stuff.
Yeah, obviously Rhaenyra has to marry someone is a major theme, and you know, last episode we had Jason and Tywin Lannister, who were noted in Fire and Blood to have fought a duel or something. They fought each other. I'm not sure if it was an actual duel, as they're twin brothers, but somehow they fought each other over her. But how about these guys? In Fire and Blood it says, in 112 the sons of Lord Bracken and Lord Blackwood fought a duel over her. And a younger son of House Frey made so bold as to ask openly for her hand. Fool Frey, he was called thereafter. Then there's a shot in the preview of some sort of a thin young man facing Viserys, who is saying on the voiceover, "Your courtship is at an end." And I don't know who that is, but I could not help but think of poor Fool Frey. We only see him briefly from the back. But
he ends up being a pretty big supporter for her later. He sticks with her, right?
He does. He ascends to Lord. Or his sister. Well, his sister does anyways.
Yeah.
But, you know, Bracken and Blackwood, the sons, obviously, the Brackens do not support her. The Blackwoods do.
Yeah.
I'm assuming that if someone wins that duel, it's probably the son of Lord Blackwood. Not that he won any particular prize for it. But,
His wife.
Sorry.
I just had Sabitha. To check that. Yes, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, Sabitha Viper Frey.
Because she's a Viper.
Yeah, originally. Yes. But yeah, anyways, yes. But yeah, Forest Frey is his name, and
yes.
Yes, yeah.
Well, that would be not this one, though, because...
Yeah, is that Forest Frey? Eldest. Forest Frey is Fool Frey.
Yeah.
Is he?
Yeah, he
is. Says he's a younger son.
Well, no, but that's early because by the time he comes along later, he's Lord. By the time the war breaks out, he's become Lord.
Yeah, exactly.
So his older brother must have died. Yeah,
at some point he becomes Lord. Absolutely.
Okay. I didn't catch that till my most recent re-listen either. I was like, oh, that is the same guy. Yeah, it's Forrest. Because they keep calling him Fool Frey, so you lose track of what his real name is. It's like, oh, yeah, Forrest.
Interesting.
Fool,
Can't
see the forest for the fools. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you noted here that the Lannister trip's kind of done differently. We thought it would be a Lannister trip. We predicted they would go west. I was a little fooled by all the red outfits. Every time I see red, I'm like, well, because red on black, we just think Blackfyre, but that's obviously irrelevant at this point. There's no Blackfyres.
Right. She mentions in the last episode that she went to Casterly Rock with her mother, which is obviously a made-up thing for the show.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think that's the stand-in for her going to Casterly Rock.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
And seeing this Jason and Tywin fighting for her hand. And so I think in the show, the Storm's End trip, which is not mentioned in Fire and Blood, is probably filling in for that. It's an opportunity to show her traveling around, trying to pick someone to marry. Other than Baratheons, Shay was just talking about this too. I don't know who she could possibly be meeting down there, because Fire and Blood mentions Tullys, Tyrells, Oakharts, Tarleys, even the Prince of Dorne, but no other notable Stormlanders.
Yeah, that is interesting.
That Storm's End trip is probably just a single focus.
I wonder if it's just right after the hunt, if she just heads south rather than before going home or something like that. Maybe that's... We don't see the full reaction to her return to camp. Like, I mean, we see their immediate reaction. Like, everybody staring at her in different ways and getting more attention and turning heads and all. But it's... Then they are just back at Red... No, I guess they do go back to the Red Keep. Yeah, because she that's when Rhaenyra gets told, you need to, you know, look at a potential husband as an ally. So they do go back. So it must be, yeah. So I guess this is just a separate trip. Anyway, all this is... We know where this is all going eventually. She's going to marry Laenor. And given that Millie Alcock is the actress for the marriage, for the wedding, this has to happen in two episodes. She has to marry Laenor this episode or next. I'm guessing next. It probably won't be this one. But the setup for it most certainly will happen. I kind of doubt she'll... That'll all happen in one episode, although it has been set up a little bit. The suggestion's been made in multiple places. But you noticed something in Fire and Blood about this as well, didn't you?
In Fire and Blood, it was the small council, obviously similar to this initial suggestion being made by Lionel Strong,
yeah,
which made this decision that the princess has to marry Laenor Velaryon. Which is going to be an interesting twist if all of a sudden they show up and the king shows up ordering Rhaenyra to marry Laenor Velaryon, because in the end of the last episode, he told her she could make her own choice.
Yep. Is he going to go back on that? He might indeed.
I wouldn't be surprised. She refuses initially because of the rumors of Laenor's orientation. She says, my brothers might be more to his taste. Obviously, in the book, her brothers are a bit older. There's less of an age gap, but it eventually does come down to this ultimatum of marry Laenor or lose her position as heir.
One thing I wonder about, that's all obviously what you said is accurate for book canon. I'm really wondering though, because there's something that throws me off here, is that she looks genuinely happy in the wedding scenes that we get shots of. Like, that's a real big, and especially now that I'm more confident of that, now that I've seen how good of an actress Millie Alcock is and how well she expresses herself through her expression. So it's just, I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but she looks kind of happy there. Or maybe I'm exaggerating. Maybe I'm remembering wrong. But she seemed like there were some genuine smiles in that scene, if I'm remembering correctly.
I mean, she looks the best she's ever looked. Of course she's happy.
She does look fantastic.
You know, I don't know. She might just be enjoying the big party. She might be happy to have her position confirmed.
I'm guessing to have
a husband that isn't going to push her. She might be having a little flirt going on with someone at the feast. So she might have other things going on.
I'm guessing she doesn't know about his orientation. I'm guessing she's not going to find out till after. I'm guessing that's how they're going to handle it. Yeah. I'm guessing the audience will know. They're going to show something. There's been a few trailer shots well in advance of this episode, like preseason, that showed Laenor in like his quarters, maybe arguing with someone or fighting with somebody. And I think that might be this episode where we see, oh, because the audience has no idea. Like, the general audience, there's not a single clue that this guy's gay. So that's got to be set up. And
I'm going to go the other way. I think Rhaenyra goes into this marriage knowing.
Okay. Okay. Entirely possible. Either way, do you think we'll see the audience will be informed one way or the other ahead of time, whether or not she is?
Yeah, I think one way or another, the audience will know when this wedding happens that Laenor is gay.
Okay. Yeah.
But I guess my choice to have Rhaenyra know is just that I would like it if that was a marriage of convenience and utility for them both. If they go to this wedding thinking, we're each gonna do our own thing. We need to get married to make everyone happy. I don't want to be with you. You don't want to be with me, but this is a good situation for us. Like, I would like it if it was that, rather than, Rhaenyra's really actually is into Laenor, and then she gets betrayed and she's mad and hurt. Like, that might be the more drama, but I just lean one way over the other.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do we still think that Joffrey Lonmouth will be killed at the wedding, like in the books? That's that'll be an interesting thing to have if they don't have a tournament or a melee.
I don't think he'll get killed at the wedding. I guess we know he'll be at. We know he's there at the wedding.
And he was introduced. If you didn't catch that, folks, he was one of the warriors there. He's the one who pulls Damon off of poor Sir Adam the Messenger. Or rather, he pulls Sir Adam away from Damon rather than pulling on.
He does. If you have watched it with subtitles on, he's identified as Joffrey Velaryon, which might have had you scratching your head a little bit.
Oh, it actually said Velaryon. Oops. Velaryon. Yeah, Lonmouth. Yeah. Whoops.
Yeah. Whoops. It's just... But he's definitely Joffrey Lonmouth.
Yeah. I wonder if they fixed that. There's the subtitles. Sometimes the spelling's wrong. For example, on the Rings of Power show, it said Harold Elrond, where like Harold as if his first name was Harold. Instead of a herald of like Harold. A messenger, Harold. You know, yeah, like, oh, my name is Harold Elrond. And like, no, that's his title, yo. So, anyway, subtitles get wrong that way. That happens.
There's been a few things, yeah. So maybe they'll fix it. A lot of people saw it, so yeah. it was pretty funny. Mm.
But, so, I guess my question though, Lady Gwyn, is you haven't weighed in. What do you think and what do you want? Do you want Laena to enter this marriage knowing? Mm.
You
about
Rhaenyra?
Rhaenyra.
You said Laena.
Yes. Oh,
Rhaenyra, yeah.
Well, you know, brothers and sisters, I mean.
Yeah, it's similar names, yeah. And she becomes friends with Laena in canon, so. Or closer than friends, it says. but I'm getting ahead
Who
of
knows?
Myself. Tell us what you think here.
I think that, I think they're going to establish it, hopefully, for Rhaenyra as well as the audience. I agree with what you were saying, Ash, about them being, kind of going into it mutually, this is the best thing we can do to make everybody happy. And maybe then we can just go about living our lives, once we make the powers of be happy. And that I think would be the best scenario. Mm-hmm. As far as whether poor old Joffrey makes it past episode 5. I don't know.
Maybe that's why Kristen Cole gets mad. If he's genuinely supportive of Rhaenyra and sees this dude like hooking up with a man, he's like, you're going to mess up my princess's mojo. I don't know what. There's got to be a way for this to happen. In contrast to her looking happy at the wedding, she looks very unhappy on that beach walk, which was shown well in advance. She's walking in her maybe the same red dress that she's got on, at Storm's End. I think it might be the same one. But where she's just not looking at him. And I guess that is a walk on Driftmark. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's even right after the wedding or shortly after.
Yeah, I guess I would again think that that was their walk before the wedding.
Okay.
That they have a talk, a heart-to-heart, that's why Rhaenyra knows going in and why at the wedding she feels fine to make eyes at whoever she's making eyes at. She's flirtatious with other people, like, oh, I look good and... It doesn't matter if I'm cheating.
Maybe that scene's in this episode because of the dress thing. If I'm right, and she's wearing the same dress, she goes from Storm's End to Driftmark, and that's even better sets up Damon buzzing their ship because that's where maybe Damon would be. And of course, Damon being at Driftmark fits really well, especially if he gets kicked out. He could go back there, and that sets up some of the other stuff in Fire and Blood where Laena and Damon and Rhaenyra become like. A team of sorts. They become friends. They race their dragons together. Again, I repeat that it says Laena and Rhaenyra became closer than friends, as if it's like, is that what are they suggesting there? Interesting. Maybe a little, anyway.
Maesters.
Yeah, maesters. What are they? Yeah.
Listen, all I'll say is Rhaenyra started off the season saying she just wanted to eat cake and ride her dragon off with someone. And who wants to ride a dragon with Rhaenyra?
Laena is also just wants to ride a dragon. I don't know. We don't know her preference for cake, but it's a safe assumption that the cake isn't a big deal. It's the dragon riding part that matters.
Right, yeah. As much as, obviously, Laena was not aged up like Rhaenyra was, so they have a little bit of an age difference. But at the point when there's teen Laena and a little bit older Rhaenyra, they could easily be friends, I think. So I would really like it if we could at least see them, like, riding their dragons together.
Yeah, right.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think they're only a few years, really. It's like, she's 12 in that one episode. And I think Rhaenyra is 15.
Yeah,
by
that's
this
not a big
point,
gap,
they're gonna be like 15 or 16 and 18.
Yeah, and Rhaenyra no longer has Alicent as a friend, so she has a little bit of a gap. So, like,
it's a bit different, you know, between a 12-year-old and a 16-year-old. I mean, a lot happens in those 4 years.
And she, again, would be a peer. That's another thing that I think Rhaenyra is... Yeah. She wants someone who's her peer. She wants to be friends with people who are peers. Alicent was her peer. Things fell apart, but they were very similar, like rank, age, and all that. That's part of why she's just not having it with any of these suitors, is they're not on her level. They're not dragon riders. They're not, like, they don't have combat experience. They're just people born in privilege without a lot of accomplishments. And I think she just has a lot of contempt for that.
Yeah, I would kind of also really like them to set up the Rhaenyra-Lena relationship, friendship, whatever you want to call it, because Rhaenyra is going to be Baela and Rhaena's stepmom, and Rhaenyra has had really a tumultuous time with the stepmother on her own part, so I feel like Rhaenyra should care about doing it right, you know? Like, she has a vested interest in how she comes off as a stepmother.
Yeah, I mean, Baela and Rhaena will be betrothed, if it follows Fire and Blood, they'll be betrothed to Jace and Luke. That's a huge
stepmother
deal.
And mother-in-law.
Yeah, and this is around, and in the book, around this time, Syrax has eggs and lays a clutch, and those eggs are among those that get put in all these various cradles of her own children and of the Velaryon children between Daemon and Lena. Well, I guess those are Targaryen, but same thing.
I mean, we talked about it a week or two ago, and we speculated on whether there was a scene cut, and we ultimately decided no, there wasn't a scene cut, that it was that we're still having a Daemon with egg scene to come, and so that could be exactly what that is.
Yeah, do you remember Lady Gwyn at the beginning trailers where Daemon has got the torch, and he's going down the steps, and he's talking about dragon eggs and all the stuff? We thought that would be him stealing the egg, Dreamfire's egg.
But his hair was short there. It was not, was not long-haired Daemon, so that's a little bit late. You know, a little bit later on, and it was a slightly different colored egg that he had. I remember the goopy egg, the egg that had like debris on it or whatever.
So we were tricked, but the details show that it, like Ashea said, not a deleted scene, most likely.
Right.
Maybe this episode, maybe next episode.
Yeah, it seems like that's going to be, that those are eggs for either Baela Rhaena or eggs for Daemon's kids with Rhaenyra much later.
Which would be after the jump,
Yeah.
So that, very strong possibility. Is there any other takes on that, Lady Gwyn?
No, I think we got it.
Cool.
Close as we can get it.
Yeah, right? Emily sends a super chat and says, love you guys. Is that Emily of the Eerie?
Yes.
Or, shout out to your new co-host there, huh?
For House of the Dragon coverage, as we mentioned. Radio Westeros is streaming every Tuesday evening.
That's right. What time is that again?
Every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Eastern time.
Cool.
With our co-host for the season, Emily the Eerie.
Hell yeah. So let's move on to the surprising plot line that I love to discuss that we still haven't gotten too deep with, but is very compelling, very surprising, very fun. We didn't know we'd get such a great topic that we thought was kind of book only. It really set the fandom afire with fun. As good as this show has been, this angle to it has been kind of dancing around the edges and just filling us with
it's a lot of puns right
and,
there
yeah look at that
fire tiger. And edges
fire and so this section I call prophetic runes in the flame, a little Tolkien-esque. I already made one Rings of Power mention. Now Rhaenyra will be shown the prophecy in verbal form on this dagger, the cat's paw dagger of ice and fire. I told you I had a lot of names for this thing. Now, okay, so my question is, I'm super curious if Aegon had this dagger made, and this is a way to, like, protect some of the lore as a way to keep it secret, but to maybe help ensure that it wasn't lost, or was this dagger older than Aegon's time? Because obviously the Song of Ice and Fire, the prince that was promised, this prophecy predates Aegon as well, so there's no need to assume that it has to be his. I don't know, I kind of think he had it made, but I'm not entirely sure. What do you think? At first I actually thought it was, I had the other opinion, but the more I've thought about it, the more I think, yeah, Aegon probably had that made. But what do you think, Lady Gwyn?
Well, it does say that Aegon, it says my blood, so definitely can see that. That's kind of what I thought first. But since the secret of actually making Valyrian steel was apparently lost in the Doom, I kind of lean towards predating Aegon. Maybe, maybe Daenys, you know, before the Targaryens left for Valyria.
Interesting.
You know, some sort of prophecy that started with actually the original Signs of Portents. Woman.
The Signs of Portents woman.
The Signs of Portents woman. So I want to just say I love that they're keeping this focus on prophecy, or on this specific prophecy, because it is a great way to tie the books and the show canons all together, possibly even becoming a thread that they can follow along with in future successor shows.
Mm-hmm.
So you're having this one thing that functions as an overarching theme, possibly is even a motivating factor in many things that will be depicted about House Targaryen.
Yeah.
And, you know, as they're building this cohesive canon, I think that's incredibly valuable. So just to, it's like an anchor in the narrative. You've got human stories and dramas that they're going to tell, obviously, and all the politics and stuff. But I think it will always come back to this prophecy. And I think the extent to which it motivates or doesn't, various Targaryens will continue to be a major factor in a lot of the stories that are going to be told, not just in this series, but specific to this series. My assumption is that Rhaenyra is going to be the only one who Viserys shares this information with, which will make that succession struggle with her brother seem a lot more urgent to her. Aegon is going to be out for his own and his mother's family's advancement, and using this device, Rhaenyra could be portrayed as this kind of tragic figure out to safeguard the future of the realm, preserving this solemn duty of House Targaryen to unite the Seven Kingdoms.
Although
against this future,
although I have to feel that if she feels that way, she should probably tell her brother. You know, like if she really thinks that this is for the safety of the realm, this is the greater good, all that. I think you would try to communicate that to your brother.
Would he believe her?
Whether would he believe her, all these things, I still think you give it a shot.
Okay.
You give it a try. Maybe that does happen eventually. Maybe we get a thing where she sends a letter to Aegon in season two and she tries to mend it for that reason alone.
The thing about that, it's a good call. The one problem with that maybe is that Aegon, remember, I mean, Aegon is out of action and like crippled so quickly that like...
Yeah.
Who Aemon wouldn't listen to her.
Tristan
Cole won't listen to her.
I guess what I'm saying is I would like to see Rhaenyra struggle with like, well, I would like to end the fighting because this is far more important. I have this information that I should communicate, but there's no one that I can really communicate it to that would do anything or believe me, versus Rhaenyra just like, oh, let me keep this to myself.
Do you think she'll tell Aegon, as in Aegon the Third, her son? Do you think she'll tell him?
Yeah, I do think she'll. I think she'll tell her sons. I don't know how many of her sons I think she'll end up telling. Okay. I kind of feel, I mentioned it in a previous episode, I feel like she'll quickly get rather disheartened with telling sons this information.
Do you think Jace will be told?
Yes.
Lady Gwyn.
Oh, Lady Gwyn.
You've said so before, and I agree with you. I want to see. Yeah, you think so too, Lady Gwyn?
I think she will tell every one of her sons. I think part of her tragedy is going to be showing her repeatedly going, I have to tell you this. And then
that child dies.
She's going to tell another one, and then she's going to tell another one. I do not think this is going to die off in the Dance of the Dragons. Mm. I think we did an analysis in one of our episodes about how, and I've seen some great ones by other people too, actually. I can't remember.
It's a blur.
Leave that because it's a blur. I can't remember
show
who to
season,
credit. So, but we talked about how, you know, a lot of the things that House Targaryen does in the intervening years between the dance and the main series could be explained if you think that they have knowledge, but it's kind of like degrading. You know, like a game of telephone. So they know a little bit less and a little bit less every kind of generation that goes by. So, and then it's finally lost. What the big drama, I would think, is that it's finally lost with Rhaegar at the Trident. And then
Which is, and then it becomes ironic that Dany finds out anyway through dreams, like Quaithe or someone tells her, or she dreams it.
Trying to make its way back, you know. But that's I think we keep your eyes on the fact that A Song of Ice and Fire is the main series.
Yes.
So I think the big thing is going to be those people trying to rediscover this information.
Well said. Well said. Yeah, we'll keep an eye on that. I'm gonna. It's funny. There is reason, like a direct reference this time because of the dagger and this reading in the flames and all that. But we've been asking all of our Saturday guests what they think about this plot line and how it's going to move forward because it's such a cool thing. And I want to hear every guest take on that. So I'm glad to hear from you on that. That was really good. All right, let's cover a few other random things that we missed from Monday. And yeah, given the overwhelming symbolism and depth of emotion in episode 3, there was a lot of things that we missed. A couple of small details. I believe I referred to Vaemond Velaryon as, in the book canon, a cousin, but he's a nephew of Corlys. Mm. And now he's his brother in this version. So small difference there, but I want to get that right. I also think I said Craghass Crabfeeder was Lysine, but he's Mirish. I got that wrong. Also not a very big difference, but important to get things right. There was that look that we talked about. We kind of laughed at how Alicent's comments on childbirth and the nursemaids were like, easy birth, eh? You know? And there's a couple of ways to interpret that. We pointed out how they were like, oh, maybe it wasn't so easy. But there's even bigger deal is that I didn't catch at the time was how you're saying this to Rhaenyra, whose mother died in childbirth and she lost four kids to stillbirth and all that. Was it three or four? It was at least three.
She had seven pregnancies.
Seven? And, oh, geez. So,
yeah. But I think they
were
said
all stillbirths. Yeah.
No, they weren't. Yeah, that you know, a couple of them, at least one, maybe died as a baby.
Yeah, yeah.
And then she had stillbirths and miscarriages and stuff.
Either way, that's a careless comment.
That was definitely a huge miss on our part that I completely blame on being sleepless and the day after con. I'm just going to blame it on that because it was as soon as I got the first comment about it, I was like, oh, that's so obvious, but also makes the point even greater, perhaps, which is that it's so easy to just be careless and callous and not think of that. Like, we saw the audience saw Emma die in childbirth and we still just like glossed over that comment.
Yep.
Which shows how Alicent herself, despite being like her best friend,
she was trying to be
all that.
Yeah.
She just didn't think of it. It didn't cross her mind.
She was trying to soothe her and didn't realize how insensitive it was. Yeah. I don't think it was intended to be mean. I mean, Alicent hasn't really been that way. We haven't seen her throw barbs like that.
Yeah, we will. We will see her throw barbs. But so far, I think she just really was trying to soothe her and just put her foot in her mouth.
Yeah, I totally agree. It was subtle on multiple levels, and we missed one of the levels initially. Here's a nice catch you had, speaking of childbirth and resemblances, Lady Gwyn. This is a great catch. More great detail by the writers here, picking out single lines from Fire and Blood and making them glow. Tell us what you found.
It's just amazing. In the first scene, in King's Landing, you might have noticed the very beginning, they're all gathered around baby Aegon and they're going, oh, you have father's hair, you have your father's eyes, you have your father's nose. Not all that unusual. I mean, it just seemed like of course, kids look like their parents, right?
That happens.
It happens and it checks out. George's instructions, if you go all the way back to 2005, he gave a long series of instructions describing all the Targaryen kings to the Russian artist Amok, who is the one who did most of the portraits that we see like in the Wiki of Ice and Fire, a lot of the ones that you might be the most familiar with. He makes a point re-emphasizing the family likeness in his description of Aegon II by saying he bears a strong resemblance to his father Viserys.
Nice.
So like you said, this is just, to me, it's another great example of the writers really paying attention, being steeped in the lore, not just having read Fire and Blood, but they've read everything.
Yeah.
They're reading the SSMs and, you know, they're bringing in all these small references and Easter eggs to every episode and so many of them that it is hard to keep up. We're going to miss a couple every week because there's so many little details.
Yeah, they're on that level. And when they're on that level, things are going to sneak by because it's super subtle. That's fantastic. Yeah. It gives us so much confidence in what's coming else. What's coming else? What else is coming? Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
Hey, I have COVID. here's another fun one. Tell us your anecdote from last week about the serving man being beaten and our joking throughout this episode about poor Sir Adam pummeled by Damon.
Poor Sir Adam.
Yeah.
When we reviewed episode 2, we made a note that in Fire and Blood, it says this: in the Vale, Prince Damon reportedly whipped the serving man who brought the news to him within an inch of his life. That is Damon hearing the news that his brother was marrying Alice in Hightower.
Yeah.
And when we were reviewing that, we said, well, you know, this didn't happen in this episode. No serving men were harmed in the creation of this video. Fast forward to episode 3. And poor Sir Adam is filling in for the serving man in the Vale.
Instead of a whipping, it was a helmet. What do you call that? A helmet whipping? It was like pistol whipping.
Helmet bashing?
Or the helmet.
Oh,
yeah.
That was awful.
Ouch.
Yeah. I guess he must have knocked his helmet out of shape because he certainly didn't bring it with him.
By the way,
in the next scene.
Apparently his helmet has some Valyrian steel in it. On the website about him. Yeah, someone pointed that out. I meant to put that in the notes and I just thought of it. Apparently his helmet has some Valyrian steel in it.
Yeah, if you go to House of the Dragon guides.com or whatever. Anyway, there's an official HBO guide that they update every week that has little info like that and like pictures of saddles and other things.
That's cool. Last week, we talked about the pug. Alva Watson pointed out that pugs were first bred in the Shang Dynasty before 400 BC. So, wow, those are way older than we thought. So that's cool.
Though I still think that those pugs were not the flat pugs, the flat-nosed pugs.
They
weren't? Right?
I think they were.
I thought that the pugs have changed snout shape significantly.
Okay.
In time.
Well,
so
I guess
my
they don't
impression
have any
is
of
that
those
even
old
not
style
yeah,
ones.
Yeah.
Anyone have a picture of the ones from the
Yeah,
thing?
Yeah.
There might be carvings, you know.
Carvings.
That would be funny.
Yeah. My biggest problem with that dog was the snuffling of the cake off of the plate.
Don't let the dog have your
cake. It
could
be what other kind of dog you want. But,
I think I accidentally skipped over a question last week about the hunt and how it was George's least favorite scene in the first go-round. I think I skipped that question by accident and how this was such a bigger one. And behind the scenes, they talk about how this is what a royal hunt would look like. It would have 1,000 people and dogs and tons of nobles, and they're just clapping for the king even though he hasn't earned any acclaim. They're just like, good job stabbing that thing that we held still.
Kingly,
while you...
Yes. Kingly stabbing.
Yeah, so... I feel like they maybe even added a little more to that just for George, you know.
George, who specifically said about Robert's hunt that royal hunt would be way more than just four guys walking through the woods with
especially when you think back to what they did with that scene. Like, obviously in the books that scene doesn't happen on page at all, and why did they bother to put it on page? Just so Robert could talk about making the eight? I mean, because I'm pretty sure that's the most meaningful conversation that happens.
That's all it was. Yeah,
like,
really
okay,
bizarre.
Yeah, we really didn't need that. All right. White Hart was one of Stannis' ships burned at the Blackwater. Davos notices that. And here's another moment where the White Hart is mentioned really early in A Game of Thrones. Sansa 3 talking to Jane Poole. So Sansa's third chapter ever. This is a really fun and meaningful quote. Here we go.
Sansa says, I had a dream that Joffrey would be the one to take the White Hart. It had been more than a wish, more of a wish, actually. But it sounded better to call it a dream. Everyone knew that dreams were prophetic. White hearts were supposed to be very rare and magical. In her heart, she knew her gallant prince was worthier than his drunken father.
A dream? Truly? Did Prince Joffrey just go up to it and touch it with his bare hand and do it no harm?
No, Sansa said. He shot it with a golden arrow and brought it back for me. In the songs, the knights never killed magical beasts. They just went up to them and touched them and did them no harm. But she knew Joffrey liked hunting, especially the killing part. Only animals, though.
That is some real 13-year-old logic there, isn't it? It's also hilarious. Like, did he go up to it and touch it with his bare hand and do it no harm? No. No. He only likes killing animals, though, not people. Uh-huh. Yeah, that's right. I love this quote. That quote is great. But yeah, it's like her third. That's her third chapter ever. It's so good.
Oh,
wow. Yeah. Mm. Not a whole lot to say there. I just figured y'all would be amused by that. Lionel Strong in Fire and Blood. Here, this guy emerging as the good advisor that's straight from canon. It looks like Viserys comes to trust him. That's going to make his presumed death by hands of fire very sad and unfortunate for the realm and for Viserys. Here's a little quote about him. We'll talk about him briefly.
Lord Lionel had studied at the Citadel as a youth, earning 6 links of his chain before deciding that a maester's life was not for him. He was literate and learned, his knowledge of the laws of the 7 kingdoms exhaustive. Thrice wed and thrice a widower, the Lord of Arrenhall brought 2 maiden daughters and 2 sons to court with him.
Book version, he's large and intimidating. Doesn't seem to matter that they change that. He never gets into a fight, so that was not an important part of his character in terms of the book. But the 2 sons are there. I'm not sure if the daughters are, they weren't a big part in Fire and Blood. I don't know that they're going to be included here. But it's not necessarily too late for that. They wouldn't have necessarily been at the hunt, although there were women there. So,
Well,
go ahead.
I guess, do you think that Alice Rivers was a bastard daughter of Lionel or of a different Strong?
No, I think a different Strong, okay. Yeah. Because she was older. Like she
yeah,
was,
yeah, I mean, just etched, yeah. Again, Fire and Blood is not clear on that. Like, they
true.
Say that, but she's a very, they refer to her in very witchy terms that I have to take anything they say about her
good point.
With a grain of salt. That I, personally, I could see if in House of the Dragon she was a bastard daughter of Lionel Strong and a sister to Larys and Lionel.
I could
see it in the show.
Yeah,
I'm
right.
Not in the book.
That would make a lot of sense. Maybe the law of conservation of Strongs.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
We couldn't get through this episode without using that phrase.
But they could also make it so that she's an aunt of them, potentially. Like,
yeah.
If they want to make her a slightly older generation, that she could be Lionel and Larys's, I mean Harwin and Larys's aunt.
That would make sense, yeah. Shout out to Knight of Ice and Fire on Twitter, who cited that really sneaky, subtle line that shows Lionel also knows how to speak to Viserys to convince him that things are his idea. He said, "We must pray, of course, that Laenor survives." Right? He's talking about, he suggests the wedding of Laenor and Rhaenyra, and he's like, "Look, I'm just like before. This isn't for me. This is just what I think is the best case." And then he's like, "But you need to help your brother." But he doesn't say that. He's like, "Well, if Laenor dies, this whole thing is off. So the unspoken part is you should help your brother."
You should do something.
So yeah. That was very clever. I didn't catch that, but it's a total slam dunk once it's pointed out. And like, good call. Good call, Knight of Ice and Fire.
Yeah.
You noticed Joanna Swan on Monday as well. On Sunday as well. That was super fun. We both were like, "Yay, Joanna Swan!" We explained a little bit of that to Sean because Sean's Unsullied. He didn't know what that was all about. So we talked about that. That was really cool. Glad to see those little nuggets get included. It is least that she rose up to be chief courtesan of, in all but name, queen of the city. I couldn't remember if it was Lys or Volantis, but it is Lys.
Yeah.
My theme song for the Stepstones plot was No Doubts Don't Speak, because neither Craghar Crabfeeder or Crag-ass Crabfeeder or Daemon had anything to say there. So, yeah. Anyway. Silent performances. That was so good. Good stuff. I really liked that a lot. The silence. Clever to do. TKOK Podcast Network sends a super chat and says, "Watching this literally from the peak of a volcano."
Yeah.
Really?
He's on vacation.
Really? Which volcano?
Yeah, that's a vacation.
He does get around, doesn't he?
What is this, Hawaii or?
Yeah, I know. I forget where did you go, Tommy? He'll chime in and tell us before we wrap up if he's still in the chat. I saw
where
his pictures, but I don't remember exactly where it is. Some beautiful location.
Yeah, well, that's amazing.
I guess they have volcanoes in Washington State, or
yeah, like Mount St. Helens, and isn't that area?
Well, I think
right?
He's in the tropics, a tropical vacation.
Tropical.
I believe, but it's not Hawaii. I know that, but we'll see if
You'll
he
see.
Chimes in, or maybe I'll go open Instagram right now and go try to snoop on Tommy,
snoop on,
and find out for us all. But I'm curious.
Well. That is about it for today, folks. We'll begin our outro process. Once again, if you have any questions for us, You can get them in either now at the last second here, or just send them to us on Monday for our other live stream, or head out to Radio Westeros' stream on Tuesday. Rather, and I should say and, not or. You can ask questions to them as well. I'm sure they'll have some good answers for you as well that probably won't be the same as ours, at least not usually, not always. They always have some different takes.
Like a Venn diagram.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. A Venn diagram. not total overlap, but a lot of overlap. Yes. That's why we work so well together. Mm-hmm. At least part of why. So, yes, we mentioned a few of our other episodes. Definitely check out our co-coverage with Radio Westeros on Dance of the Dragons. Like we said, episode 5 is fairly imminent. And check out their streams Tuesday at 7. Is that what you said? 7, right? Yeah.
Yep.
That's 7 Eastern. Is there anything else you wanted to plug or shout out or say as we close out today, Lady Gwen? Thanks so much for coming, by the way. Super fun.
No, thank you. Thanks for having me. This has been great. No, really, just, you know, come check out our streams. We're intentionally not on the same night. We overlap in our opinions, but we're not in our stream time.
Yeah.
So there's definitely lots of room for catching a lot of content.
We do appreciate that.
Out there, and we appreciate everyone who comes and checks it out. So.
Yeah, that extra 24 hours is probably pretty valuable for getting a few thoughts together.
It's still intense. I wouldn't want to be doing it Monday. Of course, I work most Mondays,
oh, okay,
too, so that's makes it difficult.
Well, all the more reason to check out Radio Westeros' coverage. In addition to ours, there's a lot of good people covering the show right now, but, you know, we've got our favorites, and Radio Westeros is one of them. Yeah. So thank you for attending today, everyone. If you were in the chat, we appreciate your participation.
Look, I can show you. I don't know the answer for where Tommy is, but I do have proof. It's a picture of him
watching this
very episode. Very meta.
With a moon.
Oh, at a volcano.
Yeah.
But no, really cool. I still don't, unfortunately, have the answer for y'all, but there's proof.
That is pretty cool. He almost looks like he's on set there. The castle in the background and the stone wall. Yeah. Nice. That's pretty cool. If you support us on Patreon, we are very appreciative of that. You can also join us with a Spotify subscription or go to our website and just send a donation. If you do so, we will send you our bonus episodes. That is the best benefit we have, but there's other benefits like access to our scripts, nicknames, and the occasional other goodie that we send out here and there. Okay. I hope I didn't miss anyone. Thanks to all of the people who make the show happen. Shout out to Ashea over here who had to handle this whole stream while wearing a mask. She doesn't get COVID from me. The things we do for live streams.
Yeah, I've tested like 4 times this week and been negative every time, and my nose is tired of it.
Yeah, that squab is no fun.
Yeah. No.
Yeah. Anyway,
no,
folks.
Thanks to Aziz for doing the stream, even though he had COVID. I gave him the out. I said, I can host it for you if you don't want to do it, but he is a trooper.
If it had been some other time, I know, I think I still would have plowed through. I just like doing this. It's so much fun. I was worried I would be too coffee, but I haven't. It's
coffee,
been under control.
Not as in not the caffeinated beverage. But
not the good kind of coffee.
Not the,
yeah. Not the delicious caffeinated kind, but the throat tremors that have been under control. So, yeah, thanks for bearing with us, everyone, and enjoy the episode tomorrow. And we'll see you for more coverage of House of the Dragon. Valar, re-read us, and Valar, re-watch us.